Right now it is time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal. And as I said, waiting in the offices of the Lakeville Journal is Cynthia Hasswinder. Good morning, Cynthia.
Good morning. Nice to hear your voices.
Yes, it's nice to be heard.
Yeah, right? Things we can't take for granted anymore.
I know. It really is pretty amazing. Well, anyway, well, here we go. We're going into a Labor Day weekend that doesn't seem like a Labor Day weekend, but it is, and nothing seems like it is, but what the heck. But we have a new executive director at the Youth Service Bureau, Kelly Parker.
Right, who I think is probably a familiar face to some people. She's been active in nonprofits in the area, especially Women's Support Services in Sharon and the Cornell Cooperative in Millbrook, and a nice smiling face. And it's been fairly quiet at the Youth Service Bureau since Nick Pohl left. It's, you know, the Youth Service Bureau is part of a, I think they're all across the country. They're certainly all over the East Coast, and they're organizations that are meant to support and help families with students in the school district, whether they're at school in the school, in the public schools or not. And they, when Cynthia Bianchi was the head of it many years ago, she did a lot of programming that was instructive. Like she talked, you know, do classes on good parenting and, you know, a lot of ways for girls to protect themselves on in relationships, things like that. And Nick Pohl turned it a little bit more toward making therapy and counseling available in this area where there's it's very hard to find counseling, period, but also especially for young people. So that's really been the focus of the Youth Service Bureau since then, is a place where students can go to talk to somebody, get some guidance, professional therapists. So Lori Collins had been in for a while after Nick Pohl left, and Kelly Parker is there, and I feel that she's going to be a great addition and is going to stick there for a while and really put her stamp on it.
You know, Cynthia Bianchi, it was a tough act to follow, how Cynthia grew that from infancy into what it became. Then when Nick came in, when Cynthia finally decided to bow out, she just did an amazing job with that organization. And it continues to be an organization that is a support agency for not only families and youth, but for schools and everything else. They really do a very broad job of support, kind of like Women's Support Services also.
Right.
How they support more than just what you think they support.
Right, and they're on the campus at Housatonic Valley Regional High School. They used to have their own building that was known as the White House, in between the high school building and the tennis courts, and are now actually on the campus of the high school, which is great.
All right, and anybody that knows me know that I have been a critic of the administration of Region 1 for a while, off and
forever,
on.
Forever, for your whole life.
Not for my whole life, but for several years. But something happened in Cornwall Consolidated School last week, and all the work that the Region 1 administrators, teachers, janitors, but everything they did all summer to put together protocols for COVID-19 worked perfectly in this first case that cropped up when there was a teacher at Cornwall Consolidated School that became infected. And, you know, we've been talking now with the superintendent, Lisa Carter, for quite a while. And they have everything set up. It worked perfectly this time. It's not always going to work perfectly. But I think people should just give a tip of the cap for all the work that was put in to put these protocols in place, because they worked perfectly this time.
Right. And so it was still during teacher training weeks. The students were not there. Obviously, school starts on September 8th. And one staff member immediately notified the school saying that they had had a positive test. And there was some concern that they might have been in contact with three other teachers during a lunch break, that they were all sitting at a table together. And a reminder to all of us, we all think that we're fine and are becoming more and more casual about just popping down for dinner with people and taking our masks off. But, you know, not a bad idea to be extra cautious at this moment as the kids are going back to school. So probably we're going to see more cases of COVID-19 coming up.
Yeah.
The numbers in Litchfield County are continuing to rise, even though we're still a fairly clean county. But, you know, keeping in mind, if you're going back for back-to-school shopping in Torrington or going to Danbury or Waterbury to the malls, just remember those are, you know, what we might refer to as red zones. Do keep gloves on. Do keep masks on. Make sure to wash your hands and monitor your symptoms.
And remember, when school gets back into session, things might happen. Things might change at the drop of a hat. That doesn't dispel the work that has been done by people over the course of the summer to make it as safe and reliable as possible to go back to school. That's my main concern, and that's why a story like this is so important for us to talk about.
Yeah.
Now, on the other side of that, when I was speaking with Lisa Carter, and you have a big story on this as well, is I don't know whether it's COVID-19 related or not, but attendance at every school is up for this school year.
It does seem likely that it's COVID-19.
You would think that it is, but you can't, you know, it has to be invested.
Don't forget, the magic of it all, if you will, is that we've been trying to get increased attendance. How are you going to get more people into the school? So
there you go.
But your story, your story lays it out perfectly, and you can see that it's not just a small attendance leap either. It's pretty significant.
Yeah, when you have 19 new students at Cornwall Consolidated School, a school that had 2 students in the graduating class a couple of years ago, like that's a big percentage of the total student body. So Patrick Sullivan spoke to Lisa Carter, the interim superintendent for the regional school district, and she laid out the new numbers. And, you know, she does say that you have the 8th graders who graduated, you have new kindergarten students coming in, so this is all those numbers are combined in there. And, of course, the official count of the number of students is made on October 1st, and we'll see, maybe the numbers will go up even higher, but it'll be an interesting adjustment for us to make. And as always happens, you know, we've been saying in the school district for many, many years now, we really need to get more students, we need to beef up the student body. Now that they've had this big influx, it is going to take a little bit of an adjustment for all the schools, and especially as we're becoming more concerned about COVID-19. And if many of these children have parents who are commuting back and forth to the city for work, you know, we all have to be on top of our game, make sure we're checking our symptoms, being really honest about what's happening in our bodies, and report.
All right.
Keep your kids home if they're not feeling well.
Yeah. Patrick Sullivan has a story that it's interesting. Last week I was just, you know, strolling around the internet, and all of a sudden Maria Horn pops up with a live broadcast with Attorney General William Tong. And I watched the whole damn thing. It was really very interesting.
He's great, right?
He is. And you've got a story on Tong offering ideas on Eversource, which he touched on with Maria Horn in this, I think she was about a 30 or 40 minute interview she did.
So we have 2 articles that Patrick did. And so, and of course, Maria Horn running for re-election, we keep forgetting November 3rd is not just a presidential election. It's also our state rep, our state senator, and our 5th district representative in Congress. And so Maria had interviewed William Tong, who is our attorney general, and is really an interesting guy. He is like, you know, Richard Blumenthal or Preet Bharara in the sense he's very activist attorney general. He sends out these very interesting emails talking about what they're working on. And so Maria interviewed him on, Maria, the former prosecutor, interviewed him on Facebook, and Patrick did 2 different stories on it. One is on Eversource, and from before Tropical Storm Isaias came by and knocked out power for, I think it was 11 days, Eversource had announced very quietly, like, oh, by the way, we raised your rates without telling you in July, and both William Tong and Governor Lamont just were like, oh, wait a minute, that's not going to be okay. And had called for a hearing on it, and Tong organized it so that the government can then participate in the hearing and really ask some hard questions. So he talked to Maria Horn about Eversource and about their concerns about it, and about, you know, concerns that came up during the power outage of, you know, workmen saying, we've been cut dramatically in terms of, you know, boots on the ground workmen, but meanwhile executive pay is going up. So is that correct? We don't know. But William Tong is going to find out, and that's going to be an interesting process. Those hearings are going on right now. And then on the other side of the page, Tong, who's been an outspoken critic of the president, has joined with other attorneys general, and they're very carefully watching the U.S. Postal Service and actively saying, we don't think that what's happening here is right. And he said to Maria, the USPS is not a business, it's a service, and it's the framework of our democracy, so we need to protect it, especially in a year like this with absentee ballot voting.
Now, in between those stories, there's a nice story about unemployment and a slight rise in employment, but also the line that really hits home is the non-farm jobs that we lost in 2020. And you look at that in our area, it's big time. Trade, hospitality, and leisure. You look at the movie house in Millerton, just devastating that what's happened to the movie house over the course of the past 6 months, and tradesmen and also all the inns that rely on people to come in around here.
And then meanwhile, not to be completely bleak, but also not to be Pollyanna, some businesses have done incredibly well in COVID and have, you know, there's certain restaurants that are doing exceptionally well. Other restaurants are really struggling. And interestingly, you know, the complexity of the government subsidies for people, if they had kids, they were choosing not to come back to work because even though they were being asked to come back to work by restaurants that were reopened because they had kids at home and they couldn't really get out of the house. There was no place to take them to. So Patrick went on, we get monthly statistics from the Department of Labor. Patrick went through, found the numbers to be very confusing, and wanted to make sure that we stress these numbers are incomplete because people are not fully turning in their data and they're not completely understanding the way that the government is collecting the data. But there is a slight increase as of July in jobs. I'm sure there'll be a larger increase in August as the government subsidies were going dormant. So we'll keep an eye on it, but overall, generally positive.
Yep. You've got a story this weekend at the Sharon Playhouse on Saturday. It's a family show. That's drive-in. And then on Sunday, a Jaws screening to benefit the Movie House, which is going to feature Nat Benchley, Peter Benchley's brother, talking about it. And also some T-shirts from the wife of
The Widow.
The Widow.
Yeah, that are going to be a fundraiser for the Movie House. So speaking of the Movie House and the Sharon Playhouse, both of which have done an extraordinary job of really trying to stick around. And, you know, we always sort of say, well, you'll miss that if it's gone. You're really going to miss the Movie House and the Playhouse if they're gone. And so they've teamed up. You have really interesting people running the Playhouse, where you've got Robert and Alan and then Carol Sadlin, who is the creator of the Movie House and has done so much for the town of Millerton. She's a Lakeville resident, but has done, she and her late husband, Robert, did so much to bring Millerton up from being, you know, as we always say, the Movie House used to be a triple X theater until they cleaned it up and helped clean up the town. Whitney Joseph wrote a beautiful editorial this week in the Millerton News about all that Carol has done. We have an editorial in next week's paper, September 10th, about not just the Movie House, but also the Playhouse. These are organizations that are doing great work for us to entertain us in good times and bad times, and we really need to step up and support them. The month of September, they've joined forces. Yep. They're doing films every weekend. We have the full listing of the movies in the September 10th Compass that's coming out next week. But coming up this weekend is Jaws, my least favorite movie. I'm super phobic about sharks. But
it's a great movie to have Labor Day weekend. Come on, it's perfect.
It's a great movie. And Caitlin Lyle, who wrote the article about it, is so funny because she is obsessed with Jaws. She just loves it. She said, just when you thought it was safe to leave the beach, the Movie House is drawing you back in with the screening of Jaws. So it's going to be a really great, and you should definitely buy your tickets ahead of time because it's limited seating.
You should ask me why I have a dog named Shark.
Why do you have a dog named Shark?
I have a dog named Shark so that I could go to the beach and call my dog.
Shark.
Right. And the
never
first,
going to the beach with you.
And the first shark came just after that movie.
Jill has been to the beach in 25 years.
But that was why he got
named Shark.
And P.S., you know, when you used to call up and get a collar or whatever for a dog, then people would say, Shark? Yeah. Sharky? And then, no, Shark.
You got a nice story here on all the new faces in Region 1, and that's not the students. We're talking about the teachers.
Teachers, there's a lot of them. It used to be that we would always have to set aside a full page for new teachers, and then for years it was like, well, maybe there's six. But this year I think we have 20, and they all took selfie photos that are great, and it's an interesting bunch, and they're all super excited to be here. And, of course, there's some that are transferring from one school to another, and we have a new principal at Cornwall Consolidated School that they're all very excited about. She's a super experienced principal. She wanted to leave and come to a smaller, more rural area. She's already moved to Goshen, and boy, did she get her first trial by fire with that COVID case, and she's done great.
Yep. So. You've got on the next page a story about the new Cornwall principal, but I also want to mention the Sharon parking lot expansion. If and when that happens, the ramp down back will come down to the station. They'll do drainage work and put up a new ramp. So we're hoping that this all happens because the ramp is from 1986, and it's seen
icy.
Its better days.
Yeah. And I just want to say that this often happens in the area where there's some essential things that need to be done, and some things get put on, and you're like, oh, that's a nice extra luxury. And people often step up and they're like, well, it's like the Taj Mahal. But if they're doing a lot in this parking lot, and one of the things they're doing is they're expanding outdoor Wi-Fi. And I just want to say, after 11 days without power in the region, it's going to be really nice to have a place where you can go and get internet because people really couldn't work and do their homework.
And they also might have
they didn't have internet.
They might have car chargers there. And what we're doing is that we're our satellite dish and that big green space. If everything goes all right, that satellite dish will be moved closer to the station, and they're going to add far more parking to that parking lot as well. So it's not just fixing up the parking lot as it is. It's an expansion of that where people could walk out onto West Main Street and stuff like that. So it's a pretty big project once it gets going.
And I have to say, selfishly, I love the idea that you can actually walk to West Main Street, because often I'm at Town Hall or at the radio station with you, and I'm like, I wish I could just cut across the yard over to J.P. Gifford and get some coffee. So now that will be possible.
Right,
so we hope that people will be supportive of this. And, of course, grants ultimately always come from our tax dollars, but it seems like a worthwhile project.
You've got a story about Uganda and the Peace Corps.
Wilson Terrell, a Cornwall kid, and this is written by Shane Stanfill, who is a friend, I think, of Wilson's brother. And, to be honest, I didn't even realize we still had a Peace Corps. You don't hear about it as much as you used to. But, you know, how wonderful for this young man to get the opportunity to go to Uganda and learn about a very different part of the world, and how great for these people in Uganda to get a little bit of guidance from an American. All the stuff that we take for granted as being obvious is not obvious to people who are living in worse conditions than we are. So a really interesting story by Shane, who is now, I believe, off in Scotland, our former summer intern.
And you and White Flower.
White Flower. Oh, my gosh. Well, I hate to, here's an inside bit of information. At the last minute during deadline, we expanded the paper. We went up 2 pages because we had a lot going on. And so I had this half page to fill, and I've been baking bread obsessively, and I keep saying, I'm going to write a story about baking the bread. But it's so complicated. It's like playing the guitar. Like, anybody can play 2 chords, but there's an infinite amount of complexity in playing the guitar with alternate tunings and all this kind of stuff and capos. The same thing is true with bread. Like, once you start getting into it, it's talk about your rabbit hole. It's so complex. So this isn't even really about baking bread. It's just about making sourdough starter. And the idea is, every time somebody has a bear break into their kitchen, the first thing the bear does is it goes and it eats all the white flour. And what is that? It seems like if I were a bear, I'd be going straight for the cookies or the honey or the jam or whatever, but they don't. They go right for the white flour. So there must be something nutritious in there. And, of course, we always say bread is the staff of life, and bread really is just water and flour. So this article is a very lengthy journey just in the experiment in making starter, which the experiment continues. And someday, maybe if we have an extra half page, I'll write about actually baking the bread. But that is a photo of the bread I had just made that morning, and you can see my starter in the background there.
I think the bears just like to make a mess, and then they can spread the flour all over the place.
I guess they think it's cute when they've got flour all over their nose,
right.
Which it is, because we always talk about it.
They can bite into it and shake their head, and a big cloud of white goes all over the place.
Right.
I want to go on to your viewpoint page, because Peter Steiner has done it again. There's two people talking, one with a mask, one without a mask. There's fires and pillage going on behind him. He built the wall, made Mexico pay for it, restored the economy, brought law and order to the cities, ended COVID-19. What more do people want?
It's interesting. It's a reminder that people see the world in a really, really different way. And when people say, well, we need to change things, they don't automatically mean we need a different president. Sometimes they mean, like, we need – it's like, we have to really be open-minded to the fact that not everybody sees the solution in the same way that we see the solution. I want to quickly jump back to the obituary page, because we have two really sad ones. A young man who died in an ATV accident from Pine Plains, and then Jeannie Schreiber, who was the young woman, not young woman, 54, who had died in the fire during Tropical Storm Isaias. They haven't officially said what it is, but somebody had said it's possible it was a generator fire. She was a woman who had had some physical challenges, was living with her mother and her stepfather. Very sad story. And then we've got Robert Trump, a guy who, often was maligned by association, and people say, like, oh, Robert Trump. But, everybody who Judith Balfe spoke to in Millbrook was saying, he was really a great neighbor to have and a great guy, and he's going to be a loss to the community.
All right, lots of different articles and lots of different letters. Once again, Falls Village Housing is on the agenda for a bunch of
people.
The
gift that keeps on giving. People really care about that Falls Village Housing Trust, and it's so beautiful that they care so deeply. And they're really kind of discussing it at great length on the letters page. And we're very happy to have these sort of very detailed deep dives into what the Falls Village Housing Trust is proposing. I would say we have equal amount of people writing in on both sides of it, for and against it. And, we tend to be a newspaper that goes with what is publicly stated, with what information is available. Very interesting to give the responses of people who are at work on it here and in other towns. We've had a lot of letters on this from Salisbury and Kent, also from their affordable housing organization. So do read those. It's very, very informative.
And your editorial is on cell service in Kent. But once again, people want cell service. They want safety. But with everything, there's just no set answer, really.
Right. And, as with Peter Steiner's cartoon, you have to be open-minded to the fact that people who are on the complete opposite side of this issue have a very strong feeling about it, care deeply about it. It's really important to them, and you have to listen to what they have to say. So there's on September 3rd, which I guess is today, a continuation of the public hearing from the Siting Council, which is, you know, I don't know who's the head of it now. It's they've had a number of changes of leadership, but as a general rule, their goal has been to try and protect our, you know, our scenic areas, but to also bring in a cell tower. And so instead of letting multiple companies each build their own tower, which is what they had originally been wanting to do, they're trying to get everybody to co-locate. So AT&T wants to put a tower in an area that's very underserved in Kent, not just from the homeowners, but from the from Sager Mountain Road, which is a very curvy, dangerous road. There's often accidents there. So there's been a couple fatals. And if you're on the road, you can't call for 911 help because there's no cell service there. So they're hoping to get a tower in that area. AT&T has invited the fire company to co-locate on that tower and put their own antenna up there. So very strong opinions on both sides, but you know, this is the moment to try and express your opinion while the Siting Council is still collecting information through the public hearing.
All right. And we've got about a minute and a half left for you to go over COMPASS.
Okay. So we have Thorncrest Farms. So normally at this time of year, when I was a kid, I would always go apple picking at this time of year. Now as an adult, what I always like to do is go to the county fairs, the ag fairs, and you always get to go see the cows. It's so interesting because you see all these different cows as you're driving around the area, and you're like, well, I wonder what that cow does and why it looks so different from the other cow. So you, if you go to the ag fairs, the kids will tell you, like, oh, well, this is a dairy cow, and this one has a lot of butter fat or whatever. So you can't do that this year. There's no ag fairs. But you can go to Thorncrest Farm, which is this beautiful farm in Goshen. It's actually very easy to access. I never quite knew where it was, but if you're driving up, I think it's Route 4, you take a right turn, and within 2 minutes, you're on the farm. It's a great way to spend a day with kids. You can actually go into the farm and see the cows. These are the cleanest cows you've ever seen. Sometimes members of the Thorn family are there, and they'll give you a little tour, and they'll introduce you to the cows. You can also organize a tour. But the biggest incentive to go there is they have the most incredible chocolate, which I tasted for the first time. People always say, like, oh, that Thorncrest chocolate is really good. It's better than you could possibly imagine. So we give instructions on how to get there. We talk a little bit about the chocolate in this article. For people who weren't able to go to the beach this summer, a beautiful showing of paintings done of seascapes. That's at the Kent Memorial Library. And then Don Bracken's paintings at the Hotchkiss Library of Sharon, which are actually made with soil. He used to be a painter who was working up in the clouds at the World Trade Center. That obviously is no longer available. He's now working the complete opposite. He actually incorporates soil into his paintings and does beautiful work. So that's at the Hotchkiss Library of Sharon until October 31st.
All right, those stories and many more in the Lakeville Journal, and don't forget the companion paper, the Millerton News as well, and tricornernews.com. Cynthia, we'll speak to you next week.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Cynthia Hoswinder at the Lakeville Journal on air here on Robin Hood Radio.